My name is Elaine, and I'll be your tour guide through South Central Los Angeles.
How to survive in South Central? A place where busting the gap is fundamental. No, you can't find a shit in a handbook. Take a close look at a rap crook. Rule number one, get yourself a gun. A nine in your ass will be fine. It in your glove compartment, cause jackers, they love to start shit. Now if you're white, you can trust the police, but if you're black, they ain't nothing but beef. Watch out for the kill. Don't make a false move and keep your hands on the steering wheel.
And don't get smart,
answer all questions, and that's your first lesson on staying alive in South Central. Yeah, that's how you survive.
Hi, this is Elaine again. Are you enjoying your stay in South Central Los Angeles, or is somebody taking your...
I do not.
So, yes. What?
I unfortunately do not think that Red Eyes has as much on, is not quite up to the standard of Moonlight Rambler, but it does have some pretty good moments.
I mean, Moonlight Rambler and Red Eyes are about, like, how you would say, at least in my comparison, since you mentioned that, kind of like the Kill Bill movies, like, you know, you can't really say one's good without the other, or one's better than the other, because they're both kind of like the same thing. So really, like, you know, the two episodes are kind of split up into, like, or one, they're like one episode split up into two parts, if you think about it that way.
That is fair, but I will say that I prefer the overall execution of Moonlight Rambler, because it's, I don't know, ridiculous and kind of amusing in that way in a lot of places, and Red Eyes doesn't have quite as many of those scenes. So this might just be an example of me going in wanting one thing and you going in wanting something else out of it, and it just sort of comes off that way.
And there's that music.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
All right, so anyways, episode 6 starts out with, like, the flashback of the scene, which I guess, like, between the time passing between the two episodes might have been, like, a few weeks or a month or something. Because Leon is...
It's not very long.
Yeah, because it's like Leon is still injured from his injuries. Do what?
Yeah, he's still all bandaged up from the battle, so it can't have been more than 2 weeks, maybe.
They all, I think it's Cilia notes that Pris is still broken up over having to kill Sylvie. So it's not like the next day like it was between episodes 1 and 2, but it's been maybe at least a week or two.
Yeah. So, like, yeah, it starts out with, like, Leon having the flashback of the battle and then noticing that Pris is a Night Saber. And then Daly wakes him out, like, wakes him up and tells him that, like, or actually, I mean, it really starts off with, like, the Night Sabers, like, attacking a Ginnam facility, the supposed Night Sabers. And then apparently, like, you know, the Pris Night Saber shoots that one dude, like, point blank in the head.
There's a lot of that going around in this episode.
Yeah, there's a lot of headshots, like, point blank, too. Let's see. Yeah, so then, like, Leon gets up, and then, like, they find out that the place has been, like, they stole, like, super boomers from them. And pretty much Leon heads to the station.
Who is that purple-haired chick?
That's Madeline, I think.
Madigan.
I want to bring her up because I don't know how much interest you have in her, but her English dub is awesome because her accent is Scottish.
Her last name's Madigan, so she has to have a Scottish accent.
I was transferred from the Ginnam Corporation of Ireland and Scotland to come to Japan. I take over Brian and Jerry Mason's position. That's probably a terrible accent.
Well, it's like it sounded like you were trying to do a Japanese guy doing a Scottish accent.
It is equally as convincing as the Scottish accent going on in this show. And I feel, and what's going to be funny is I'm going to find out that the person who played that part was actually Scottish.
Yes.
Well, then also Leon on this gets a cool gun that shoots, instead of 6 bullets, 3 bullets.
That's right. That's right.
Which is called, the Earth, like, Shaker or whatever it's called.
Earth Mover.
I guess it's like an elephant gun that's a revolver or something. It reminds me of a... It kind of reminds me of the guns that they have out now, which is a revolver that has, like, 4 chambers. and you can pretty much stick a 50 caliber bullet into them or like a 410 shotgun. I can't think of the name of the actual guns, but I've seen them. Like, I see them at pawn shops all the time. So it's like Leon has something to the equivalent of that as his main pistol instead of going for the Smith & Wesson that he had.
You should also pay attention to how many times Nene is shooting in that scene, too. You should try counting how many times she's firing that gun. It's at least 40.
She has the extended clip, which is actually just a clip taped to the end of another clip.
It's like, I guess it's like a 22 or like an airsoft gun. It's an Uber banana clip. It's like one of those high cap airsoft guns that she brought in to work just to shoot at a target and miss completely. And then Leon starts giving a crap, like, you know, if you're any more pink haired, you probably might hit the target more. And he sees tears. He's like, oh, geez, she's crying. I just made a jerk of myself.
The thing I want to make fun of is that Nene largely seems to work a desk job. And I think it would be funny if Leon walked up and was like, wait a minute, who gave you a gun?
It's like, wait a second. Like, you were actually issued one of these? You can actually use these? He's like, 2 weeks ago, you were my assistant going around finding, like, vampire crimes with me.
And before, you were working, like, a toll booth.
Yeah. We actually forgot to mention in episode 5 that, like, Leon talks about, like, all these hot women are dying. And Annie's like, you're right, I better protect myself. And he's like, what?
Oh, there's a much funny moment in that where they talk about the whole vampire rumor because of the blood draining, and Nene at one point says, what if it really is a vampire?
Blah, blah.
Blood?
Just Dracula pops in on the scene.
Blah, blah.
Dana goes to bed every night with, like, garlic around her neck and, like, and like a stake in her, and like a hammer in one hand, a stake in the other.
She finally gets a date, armed with like all of her coffee, and like, Nene, it smells terrible in here.
No, it's like she's armed with all of the Belmont weapons from the Castlevania series. She's got the cross, the axe, the holy water.
She's got the whip, and she's got the garlic around here, and her date comes in and says, like, Nene, it smells terrible in here, and he picks up the whip. It's like, what were you planning for us to do?
Well, I thought she couldn't get dates. I guess she could. I don't know, but
Mackie would be interested.
Mackie's into that kind of stuff, as long as it's inside of a van.
As long as they're related.
As long as there's a van involved and a bicycle within the van.
Oh God.
But yeah, like,
I think the important parts of episode 6 to hit on are probably the parts that involve Largo.
Largo is like a super robot villain. He is crazy.
Yeah, well, there's also the part, okay, like, I have to make this as a joke, too. Like, apparently, I think with the 80 police helicopter pilots, like, companies do this, too, where you go into a meeting to get, like, updated on, like, what your company's going for. Like, you have your meetings. And so with copter pilots, I have to assume, like, okay, I think we're safe from any attacks from the ground. So I think if we take these training courses, everyone's going to be okay. But they did not take an effect that they can get shot out of shot down from a laser beam from space.
That is my favorite part of his confrontation with Leon and that helicopter pilot, because he uses his space laser to take on the helicopter, but not the guy who's holding him at gunpoint. His boomer instincts were so attuned to killing that helicopter that he thought it was more important to blow that up than the guy with a gun on him.
Which, well, I mean, Lorgo does get shot eventually from Chris. But I like how there's some feedback going. All right, now it stopped. But I like how, like, Leon gives a thumbs up to the pilot, like, yeah, we do. We got this in the can. We're good to go here. And the pilot's like, what's that guy doing looking at me? So he starts freaking out because he knows, like, this doesn't look good. And then just the beam from space comes down and hits him.
Yep. I also like previously, because he uses the laser before that and it only hits one car and is able to destroy – not only destroy the car, but not completely destroy it in the boomer inside, but doesn't even bother the road that the car is on. And He's also able to pinpoint the laser so that it will only destroy that helicopter. But later on, all of the lasers that he fires destroy entire buildings.
And cities, and like anything surrounding to demonstrate his power.
Yep, it's like, fuck Sydney, Australia. Laser time! Well, maybe it's like all of the lasers have varying power levels, so that's why there's actually a delay between him looking at somewhere and a laser firing down. The satellites have to move into the correct position based off how strong he wants the laser to be.
Well, I think Slade mentioned in the first episode that there's a different range of powers for the sat beams too. Like you can adjust them from this to.
That's probably right. What it is. He's like, we can't tell, but that's like telescoping vision. He's looking at a very tiny little dial on the side of all the satellites. It says laser power on it. You turn it left or right to make the laser stronger.
We actually kind of forgot all the stuff in the middle before we got there, because while this is going on, there's also a fight between Lena, Celia, and Nene on top of the bank roof where they get, you know, called out for the real Night Sabers to show up and fight the fake Night Sabers, which then wind up being Super Boomers. And they're fighting up there, which when I use the term fighting lightly, because it's pretty much Celia doing all the work, and then Nate and then Lena does some stuff, but then of course Nene just kind of sits to the side.
Mm-hmm.
And then Maki. But then all of a sudden, like, they're on their last leg, like, how they're gonna get out of this, and then Maki shows up with like a freaking military sized helicopter and shoots like 8 bajillion missiles.
And scatters the roof with missiles, and the whole roof just blows up in a sea of fire.
And then pretty much as soon as they get on the helicopter, like, okay, guys, here's the game plan. Here's how we do. Nene, you obviously suck. So we have nothing to say about that. Lena, you did kind of pretty good. And I wish I didn't get kicked as much.
One thing that I do like after they get into the little carrier that Maki pilots is that all of them look really, really exhausted, especially including Nene, who, again, just sort of stands there.
Yeah, well, she must have like spent all of her time. She must have been like breathing really heavy from that tense action she was watching.
They got her. Got her adrenaline running. No, I think she was playing hide and go seek with the boomer she was supposed to fight.
Okay, boomer, you count to 10 and then come and find me.
She just jumps off the building.
Come out now, where you are.
Well, that's something that's weird that happens towards the end of the fight. They're backed up against the building, and then Nene says something like, what are we going to do? We can't run anymore. Yeah, because none of our suits have jetpacks or anything. That's never happened.
Well, I mean, Celia had the jetpack, or the one with the wings, and that got knocked out within the first attack. So her ability to fly somewhat is out of question, or out of action, at least. But then, of course, as soon as they get back on the you know, this military grade helicopter, which it never showed up in any of the episodes.
The Nightwing.
Yeah, that was something that was kind of funny. It's like, Mackie, did you have this the whole time? What are you doing?
What do you think in Germany, dude?
No. Like, he probably found it in the dump the same way you found the Highway Star and put it together over like a weekend. He was like, yeah, I found all these missiles laying around in like the dump next to the sewer plant.
Now, I just called his buddy Bruce Wayne over in Gotham, and they just got together for a couple of months and just decided to go ahead and have one of those play dates.
I like the idea that Maggie have a project is a together. Of Batman. Makes me wonder what Batman would be like if he had to fight Boomer Crime.
Or if Batman had a hard suit. That'd be pretty tight.
That happens from time to time.
Read that fan fiction, Mr. Freeze Meets the Nightsabers.
Wait, I think there's an actual Bubblegum Crisis fan fiction of Bruce Wayne meeting with Sylvia.
No, there's one with Mr. Freeze.
It was like Sylvia had to go to Gotham City for some business trip or something. Like, it was supposed to take place after Crash. Again, this is fan fiction, so I've read that somewhere, and I've read it briefly. But no, so apparently, like, everyone gets on the military-grade helicopter, and then Maki's like, oh, Pris took the hard suit and the motor slave with her, and they're after Genom Tower.
Well, so according to Maki, she took her crappy old hard suit, and then they're like, oh, no, she doesn't stand a chance in that thing.
Yeah.
Oh, no.
That's the whole plot line that the dub created themselves.
Yeah, because this is supposed to be the episode where Pris is supposedly supposed to die, and there's a lot of moments where you're like, she should die there, but she hasn't yet.
There's an entire part of the episode where with her fight with Largo, where he could very easily kill her, but then goes on a villain moment because she gets knifed in the stomach by Henri because Largo tells her she's the one who killed Sylvie. You can kill her and get revenge.
No, 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 no. Not only that, but like Pris goes to hug her and it causes the knife to go deeper inside of her. And you're like, why?
My first reaction to that is like, wow, the hard suits really suck if you could just get knifed through them.
Well, mine is you got knifed by a boomer.
Is it a boomer knife?
It was a ceramic knife.
I would be willing to believe that it was some sort of boomer knife.
It was a Ginzu knife made by Genom.
But the thing that gets me about it is that after she gets knifed in the stomach and she's, you know, bleeding because she's gotten a knife in her side, later on she's fighting Largo in her new hard suit and she's pretty spry for a person who just got knifed in the gut.
Mm-hmm. And kicked in the gut and kicked out of a building and kicked around and kicked in the face.
Yeah, exactly.
Falcon punch.
But then she has an inner monologue moment of like, I want power to bring this bastard down, and then her new hard suit shows up, and then like it takes care of the other boomers, and then like it just explodes with a new suit and it has like that suit up moment. It's so like, you know, tokusatsu kind of, and they got that like synth techno music playing in the background as she's suiting up instantly.
Which was pretty cool. I do like that she apparently has a button on her old hard suit that just makes it explode off of her.
Yeah.
No, I really do think that that's kind of cool. But one thing that that you can tell that Largo's going totally villain moments on Pris is that he is standing on top of the building that he just threw her out of. And then he's like talking to her and posturing and she's just standing there. And I'm like, Largo, you want to kill her. Use the satellite cannon.
He's got like 10 ways to Sunday to kill her at any given moment, like, and he just wants to talk.
No, I can't be wasting my satellite lasers.
It's a total Smurf moment. Come on, people.
Maybe it's like a delayed effect. Like he doesn't have enough MP to cast that anymore.
He's got to let it recharge. He's got to let his mana cast recharge.
Doofin' Smurf moment.
Man, I knew I should have brought some mana prisms with me.
No, killing her with a statue would be too easy. He wants to watch her suffer first. He wants to watch her get utterly humiliated.
I'm willing to believe that up until a certain point. To be fair, at one point when the other Night Sabers do show up to help Pris, he does try firing the satellite cannon at them. And then Lena's in a giant battle robot suit that interfaces with her hard suit, and she's able to cancel out the space laser with her own laser gun.
Right. Yeah, Lena's pulling back up, and Nene's the scouter on that. And then Nene's able to pinpoint where the satellite is and shoot it pretty much moments right after the satellite shoots. And then, of course, that's able to, move the satellite beam towards Largo and catch him on fire, basically.
Mm-hmm. I love that Nene has to do the pinpoint accuracy for Lena's suit. I like to think that Cilia didn't build a navigation system into that suit just so Nene would have something to do.
But of course, like what really won the battle in killing Largo was the headshot. Again, we've got three headshots in this whole show where apparently like Largo, the first one came from the guard, the second one was from the
back again.
Yeah. We didn't talk about Largo's meeting with Quincy though.
Yeah, it's pretty much just Quincy, or his meeting with Quincy was he kidnapped the defense minister, that the guy that's in charge of security for Genom, and then he comes up there and he starts like they get pulled in front of Genom, and then the security guy's like, oh, don't kill me, I didn't tell him any secrets, and then pretty basically Quincy's second in command, which is the girl who took over Mason's spot, just point blank shoots him in the head.
Mm-hmm. There's only one sound for something like that.
And that is...
Boom headshot.
Oh. Is that crickets?
I hear it. I don't... that one went over my head, I hate to say. Unfortunately, it didn't go over the head of that other guy.
The platypus.
Oh. There are no platypuses in Bubblegum Crisis. How are we supposed to know things like that?
No, but there all are dolphins in the 2040 universe.
that apparently chill out with the lingerie store.
Mm-hmm.
It's been so long since I've seen that.
Now, one thing I do want to kind of talk about is Largo's powers, because every now and then he'll just fling, because later on you see it work, because mm-hmm. he apparently just shoots compressed air out of his hands with enough force to pierce through a human head. But there is a point where he shoots Quincy in the head, strong enough through the head to pierce the wall behind Quincy's head. And it really just sort of looks like he waves his hand, there's a red effect, and then Quincy's dead.
Yeah, he really does just seem to have, like, psychic powers.
Well, I mean, we also find that Quincy's a robot, which it's just a body double, which I wonder if the real Quincy was there hiding somewhere and just put, like, sits a body double on the and just kind of runs off in a secret passageway.
There's, a closet down the hall he's just sort of sitting in.
He's like in the next room over, and he's like watching. He's probably watching like the whole battle going on.
Eating popcorn. No, it's like a Wizard of Oz moment. And he's just behind the curtains.
Pay no attention to that man behind the curtains.
That looks exactly like me.
Oh, that would have been so great. I've actually put this in the show, but yeah, like a. Anyways, Largo gets capped off by Leon at a distance with a super gun and gets like thrown off a cliff.
Leon pulls a Golgo 13 moment because he's like a whole other building away and headshots that guy with a pistol.
He's on the he's on the higher rise of the building where they're at and headshots him from with the pistol. It is a complete Golgo 13 moment. Like it would have been awesome if like. As soon as Leon like puts his sunglasses on and like looks away, you hear that like the TV sound effect where it's Golgo 13.
You hear the one from that, or you hear the one from the NES game where it goes dun na na na. Oh well, I have something.
I have both those games, so
yeah. No, I've played the Mafod Conspiracy. That game is a pain in the ass.
I haven't tried. I haven't tried the Conspiracy one not yet.
That one, it's not worth it. Let's put it that way. That happens. Yeah. What I do like, though, is that he gets set on fire by the satellite laser cannon, and then Leon shoots him, and then he falls off a building. And Pris's note is that no one would ever survive a fall from that far. That's apparently what she thinks would take him out.
Yeah, totally not.
Lena said that.
After he fell.
Oh, sorry, Lena. My mistake.
So you have to – between this episode and Crash, like, Largo's had enough time to come up with a nuclear boring machine with a spare time laying on the ground.
The nuclear boring machine. No! Was that the evil machine in the show, or was that just Crash itself?
That was – I'm talking about Crash.
Obviously.
Boring.
And then, of course, we have this monologue with Celia, and then she mentions something and goes, Brian J. Mason, and then Rock Me plays, which that kind of ties into, like, oh, Largo was Brian J. Mason all along, and long story short, that's that whole thing with the why Mason's inside the Largo unit is, like, I remember telling the guys this on your podcast with the Crash, it was, like, the robot that wanted to take over, like, the boomers and everything, and the 80 Police MAGA was... somehow transferred into the Genom system. And so like when the way I understood it was Mason has in episode 3 or whenever has been uploading his consciousness to this Genom system. And I guess that program fused with that. But at the same time, you know, he's got control of the information for the black box, which is controls all the satellite lasers. And you put that all in one and you get Largo.
Mm-hmm. And he ended up wanting to be Boomer Moses.
Yeah.
And almost gets away with it.
Let my boomers go.
If it wasn't for those meddling nightsabers.
The yeah. Nightsabers being the Egyptians and Largo being Moses to open the path of Mega Tokyo for them to cross to the to
wow.
cross to Boomertopia.
The barren land that would be mm-hmm. Boomer to Israel.
To the land of electricity and good data storage.
And fast internet access.
Mm-hmm. It's actually just across the streets. It's actually just another subset of Mega Tokyo, but it has BIOS.
They just kind of like gather in the abandoned Circuit City buildings. That's the promised land.
Promised land for boomers.
And we shall dub it the Net Slums.
Ooh. Yeah, I would say that this is the probably the best subset of Bubblegum Crisis from my perspective, because it has it has some good moments. It has some dumb moments that are hilarious because of that. And I think that you will get the most fun out of watching these two episodes.
It's definitely the most like impactful dramatically and everything. It's very well directed. I mean, mm-hmm. again, like Obari just surprises me how well he can direct another series. But then when it comes to his own stuff, it's just trash.
I know. That's what got me about it, is that the action sequences in these episodes are really good.
They're really well done, yeah. And we don't really get that kind of quality in the next two episodes either.
Yeah.
I did want to point out that Pris has her own van in this, and it's called the Pris.
Yeah. I love that Celia comes knocking to that place, and there's two things. One, Pris apparently lives in a junkyard. And two, Celia says something when she comes in the room. It's like, nobody answered, so I just let myself in. Really? Is that what you do when nobody answers at your friend's house? I'm just going to assume that I can come in regardless.
She played too many like old school SNES RPGs where you just walk into other people's houses and start talking to them. She walks over to Pris's
dresser and takes out a potion.
And wind up being Pris's vodka.
Spy Hunter.
Apparently there's no walk-in houses in Spy Hunter. But, yeah.
Okay, Cloak and Dagger.
That also makes sense. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I think that wraps it up for 5 and 6. How are we on time, John, if I may ask?
We're running way over.
I know that.
It certainly feels like that. No offense.
Wait,
One hour and 40 minutes.
Damn.
No Geek Nights tonight.
You should just split it up into 2 50-minute episodes.
So that would be a good idea.
So in the next podcast, we'll be going ahead and covering Bubblegum Crash OVAs 2 and 3.
Or what?
What? I don't want to do Crash again.
No. We cannot skip over episode 8 of Bubblegum Crisis. It's called Scoop Chase.
Yeah, we got 7 and 8 to do left, Steve.
No, I remember well,
that's
the first
what
time.
2 and 3 is. Okay, because we did episodes 1 through 5, and tonight we did 1 of Bubblegum Crash.
What?
Am I not correct?
No, you're not.
What?
I don't see how you're correct on that.
I don't know what he's doing.
I don't know either.
We did 5. We did 5 and 6 of Crisis tonight.
Yes.
Right, 5 and 6.
Yes.
And there's 2 more episodes.
Right.
Of Crisis.
And
yeah, 7 and 8, and then we are done with this.
Good old Crisis.
Much better than Crash.
It would be better to split this up into 2 episodes, at least for us, I guess. That would make sense, because then we can have an extra week or so without recording and use that time off. That would be nice.
Oh, my God. Wait, does that mean that we wouldn't record next week?
No, we are. Like, I mean, regarding us, we have we're on Tune Radio, so we have to, like, stream it for a week. So like if we with us making like 2 episodes out of this one, then that gives us like, you know, a couple weeks off or whatever. And then plus we're gonna do bi-weekly stuff starting in April, where we're gonna record every other week, which will be easier for us for a time being.
Is that when you guys are doing the Kawajiri month?
I'd like to do a Cowagery month eventually. Maybe okay. that might be April, and then if we do that, we could just try to. There's no way I can cram Cowagery stuff into an hour. There's no way in hell that can happen.
I could do an entire podcast by myself on that one line from Wicked City.
Which line is that?
Yeah, you know which one I'm talking about.
No, I don't.
Think about the airport.
Oh,
I mean, it's been a while since I've watched Wicked City, so.
Actually, yes, this isn't your usual sort of toy.
Yeah.
I have to say this, Wicked City grows people up from being the weeaboo anime fans to, like, the Eagle Scout anime fans in one jump. I say this, there's a story behind this, because, like, I got the DVD off Guzex, which is heck of a lot cheaper than getting on, like, Amazon or whatever, and my friend's brother came over, because we all watched Evangelion, so we all watched the end of Evangelion for, like, and this is, like, the third time for me, so the poor kid was already confused enough as it was, and then I put in Wicked City next.
Now, I remember when I first watched Wicked City when I was 11, and I remember getting past the worm scene, and then I wanted to go to the bathroom and hit my head against the toilet for a while.
That's the best reaction to Wicked City I've ever heard.
So what was your reaction to, like, the gang rape and, like, the abandoned house with the demons taking shifts on raping the girl?
Matt
and then Maki. getting blown away with the gun cannon.
The woman who becomes a vagina.
Oh, yes.
Of ultimate desire.
And isn't even like when we talked about Amon, the Apocalypse of Devilman, and talked about that guy who becomes a vagina. No, she literally just turns her torso into a giant vagina. It doesn't just kind of look like a vagina. It isn't representative. It is literally that.
Again, I mean, it's been years since I've watched it. So wasn't it also like glowing and the ultimate like desirable object?
Yes. In fact, actually, before Taki Renzaburo was able to blow her away, he was mesmerized by the gooch of ultimate desire.
And the juice is coming out of it.
It's the vagina of power.
All right, Wicked City is its own can of worms.
Yeah, this is why I said there's no way in hell we can cover Kawajiri stuff in two episodes.
It's like we'd have to do Wicked City into two podcasts on its own. Everything that isn't sex and everything that is sex being
because you could talk about the justifications and unjustifications of like semi monster rape in like an hour, at least for us.
Like the dick worm.
That is Wicked City. But whenever you say that, the first thing I think is Doom Megalopolis.
That is something that I remember. It was only about half a year ago, and I remember what you were doing in the background. Here's a weird talent that he has. He can beat Legend of Zelda Link to the Past in about 2 hours without any practice. He plays it once a year, and by the time I got to, I believe, the last Opolis, he had beaten it.
I beat it by the time that he got to the scene where that I don't remember a lot of Doom Megalopolis, but when Kato is confronted in like the old shrine.
Okay. You screwed up a lot of times in that run too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I've got Doom Megalopolis on DVD, and I bought that for like $7-$8 used at FYE.
Me too.
That's some good entertainment there.
Absolutely. I highly suggest watching Doom Megalopolis. It is worth your time.
Just going to attack him with a train.
And then there's the Buddha statue that's like able to mine the caves after demons.
Yes, and then there's
the turbine divinity.
The lesbian nurse that like turns into an acid spitting parasite.
It's time for your medicine.
And then there's also the big flying manatee that hovers over like the house.
The one
I love that scene because that guy is convinced that magic is not involved. A giant manatee just crashed into your house. What else could have happened?
Dude, Megalopolis is so confusing.
I agree. But worth watching.
No doubt.
We have stopped talking about Bubblegum Crisis. It might be worthwhile to stop the episode.
Yeah, unless we got any final remarks or whatever.
Mysterious Night is awesome.
I like the song. Yeah.
Yep.
I actually wanted to... I've been wanting to do this since the first episode, but that was to take Ice Cube's How to Survive in South Central rap and compare it to Mega Tokyo. So, like, the rap would... Because I happen to like that song a lot, but it's like, I can go as How to Survive in Mega Tokyo, a place where busting a cap is fundamental. No, you can't find the shit in a handbook. Take a closer look and something. Rule number one is find yourself a gun. I can't... Okay, so, like, this... All right, I'm messing this up already. Crap. But part two starts out with, like... Part two is, don't trust nobody, especially a sexeroid with a hooker's body. It ain't nothing but a trap. Them females will get you jacked and kidnapped.
I like how you rhymed body with body.
When did I say that?
Nothing wrong with that.
It was body and nobody, I think.
I probably did say that. I'm just trying to go off memory of probably the greatest Ice Cube song ever. I'd have to probably add an excerpt to this in this episode, but oh well.
So, should I stop recording?
Yeah.
I'm shocked.
Otherwise, we're going to have this be the Kawajiri / Bubblegum Crisis one.
Who would have thought those two could have mixed?
I certainly
did. We did. Yeah.
Yeah. I could find a way to mix the two.
So, we come to another closing of the Cool Kids Club podcast. Tune in next week when we'll hear Dustin say,
"F the 80 police." Coming straight from the underground, a young boomer just got his head capped. God, I can't believe I forgot these songs.
Dustin with his cool laydown tracks.
I'm totally messing up NWA's vibe.
Indeed.
Dissing them completely. I can't stand it.
That's it, yo. I'm telling you, go ahead and drag your ass down to East LA, drop your ass in the hood, and then go ahead and say, yeah, man, this guy got like a free KFC, yo. And then just leave you there. Yeah, that's it. Word. Peace out.
We're done with this. Stop it.
CG. You totally completely blew.
You said past guest, and CG is a past guest / co-host
/ troll.
I like that I know enough about that whole thing to actually get that joke.
I think you know more than what you should, but...
We could probably just add, like, Viku, Daft, and all of Daft's friends and just have an open mic.
No, because Viku and them are going to be like, you guys are terrible. First of all, Zionic, we want you off the show. We've tried to petition Mason to get you off the show. Their so-called petition is just like Daft complaining. And like, Viku and I totally agree that Zionic is just not made for this podcast. He's kicked us out and all this other stuff. And, you know, he's taken control completely. I read that in the AIM chat. I'm just like,
well, you know what?
I don't care.
On that note, I honestly think, and Amanda, you'll excuse me on this one, okay?
Oh, here we go.
I think that we should definitely go ahead and get a digital coupon for a box of Tampax and a bottle of My Doll.
Wait, what?
Exactly.
Because he pissed. Honestly, I mean, how many times have these guys pissed and moaned?
Well, if it makes you feel any better, Steve, Viku is kind of on sides between you hating Sketch, and he doesn't like to admit it, because I think you and him are about equal, but neither one of you want to admit that. You haven't even met Viku yet. It'd be interesting to get you guys on the podcast or in one talk room setting, because I think that would be more interesting than the CG argument, because you guys would be so. He's kind of a big jerk too.
Is he?
Yeah.
Has he had the major D for douche as his middle name?
It kind of ought to be. I don't know. He's makes some good points depending on the topic, but I told him because I was just like, you know what, I'm not mad. And I said, you know, you guys don't have anything tangible against me to try to kick me off the show. And he's like, well, what about this for tangible? How could you get your fist and punch yourself in the face and pretend it's me? And I'm like, that's not going to work. And I wasn't really mad at him for saying that, because I don't know. I'm just like, I never kicked you guys off the show. You guys just stopped showing. And I've always been like, you know, when are you guys going to show up? And like, they never appeared or said anything. So I'm not even.
That's on them. Where do you fall into that equation? It's
nowhere.
On them for going.
I know this. This is under crap. I already know, Steve.
Yeah. No. Well, obviously.
It's his problem if he dislikes me for whatever reason. And like, I'm like, whatever, dude. And they're like, well, this podcast could have been better if Zionic was on the show. And I'm like, their main interest was to get rid of it after like 8 episodes, if that.
Exactly. Well, yeah, they just wanted to do it like as a short joke and then drop it or.
I've got it recording again, by the way.
Wow, thank you.
Did that record?
I don't know.
Please? Yeah.
I'll find out in the post editing if like Steve Sneeze made it into the recording.
It's in there.
Steve, you okay?
Yeah, I'm okay.
So today.
That will take out. No, I'm kidding.
Fuck the police coming straight from the underground. A young nigga got it bad cause I'm brown. And not the other color, so police think they have the authority to kill a minority. Fuck that shit cause I ain't the one for a punk motherfucker with a badge and a gun to be beaten on. And thrown in jail, we can go toe to toe in the middle of a sale. Fucking with me cause I'm a teenager with a little bit of gold and a pager. Searching my car, looking for the plotter. Thinking every nigga is selling narcotics. You rather see me in the pen than me and Lorenzo rolling in a Benzo. Be the police out of shape, and when I finish, bring the yellow tape to take off the scene of the slaughter. Still getting swole up bread and water. I don't know if they fags or what. Search a nigga down and grabbing his nuts. And on the other hand, without a gun, they can't get none. But don't let it be a black and a white one, cause they'll slam you down to the street top. Black police showing out for the white cop. Will swarm on any motherfucker in a blue uniform. Just cause I'm from the CPT, punk police are afraid of me, huh? A young nigga on the warpath, and when I finish, it's gonna be a bloodbath of cops dying in LA. Yo, Dre, I got something to say.
We'll be right back.
hustle, working in the city. Daylight keeps our fears at bay.